Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, I'll be interviewing John Marcotte about his efforts to ban divorce in California. Also, I'll be talking up the role of boobies and other lady parts in the ongoing healthcare reform frenzy. So the right-wing organization, the American Center for Law and Justice, put out a trailer for their upcoming documentary chronicling the rise of the anti-choice movement. See if you can spot what's interesting about all the people that they have to interview.
The church was significantly asleep at the switch, but so were the American people.
In the mid-80s, we were starting to look for ways to really engage the church in practical ways to get involved.
So I'm praying, and many of these pastors are praying, that Christians will, for lack of a better word, just get mad.
A judge can use his raw power to try to stifle the movement, but God has raised up a move of his spirit here that no man can stand against.
Yep, all men. In fact, the only women you see in the trailer are the pro-choicers, which creates this real sense that this movie is about a bunch of evil men that are so certain that they own women's bodies that they're willing to dedicate their lives to it. Which is probably not the message they wanted to send, but is nonetheless accurate. Did you hear that a task force recently released a set of new recommendations for breast cancer screening? Was the reaction that the panel's findings received. Personally, I was relieved to hear that the panel didn't really see a point in starting mammograms until you're 50 if you don't have any risk factors. I'm looking forward to 10 more years free of booby squishing. Also, they found that the self-exams don't do much, which is a shame, but also means that most of us who do forget to do them have less cause to beat ourselves up over it. This whole story shouldn't have really been that big a deal, but it just so happened to come out right as right-wingers are both raising fears about healthcare rationing while also rationing your access to abortion. And so a lot of people immediately grew concerned that this was about finding a way to cut back on healthcare at the expense of women's lives. Concerned, or in the case of most conservatives trumpeting this, faux concerned for politically convenient reasons. Opponents of healthcare reform immediately and falsely implied that this panel had created a binding recommendation that all people would have to live with this under healthcare reform. For instance, David Horowitz and Glenn Beck pushed this lie.
Wouldn't that be the mammogram thing? I mean, the insurance companies are saying, we're still going to cover that. But the Democrats now, the government is now saying, no, we don't need to cover the mammogram thing.
Right. Women are a vulnerable group. The Democrats are operating by the numbers. Of course, everything that you said is correct. I mean, they're imposing a rationing system. Their drive is to get a single-payer system, which means the government will make the decisions for you. And they already let out of the bag the fact that some women are not going to get mammograms, and that means they're going to die needlessly.
This is what we like to call in the biz a straight-up lie. The Democrats have nothing to do with this independent panel's recommendation, and the HHS has already declared they're keeping the old standards in place. The panel's recommendations were based on a desire to help women because the current standards are creating too many false positives for every case of cancer detected, and that's no small thing when you consider how false positives can sometimes result in painful or harmful treatment. Also, the tests themselves are painful and give you a significant and dangerous dose of radiation. But this reality hasn't stopped healthcare opponents from saying the most outrageous things about how the Democrats just made this up because they're stealing from you. Republican Representative Marsha Blackburn went on TV and outright claimed that the HHS is behind this. Luckily, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz was there to fight with her about it.
But we have to realize this group that made this recommendation, this isn't some outside group. This is a part of HHS. And when
it's
you look at the 118,
group. That is not accurate.
When you
it
look at the 100,
no,
it is a part of HHS.
No,
The problem is that opponents of healthcare reform are allowed to just lie like this on TV without anyone stepping in to correct them, except other politicians, and so the audience is left splitting the difference. In this instance, it was even more disturbing because you had three people lying and only one person telling the truth. It was unbelievably frustrating to watch. Of course, no cavalcade of dishonesty is complete lately without Sarah Palin hopping in.
Mammogram recommendations, this whole issue is demonstrating precisely what you pointed out, the problem about the panels, the death panels of government bureaucrats, and I think you call it the hospice shooting.
In fact, the only threat of taking people's actual care they currently have away is one that Palin and her buddies support, the Stupak-Pitts Amendment, which does get between you and your right to abortion care. But of course, Palin, like all the rest, is lying about this. The government has made it clear that they're sticking to the 40-plus recommendation. What's interesting is the bigger lie that's being pushed, the idea that more women will die of breast cancer if we pass healthcare reform. In fact, the opposite is true. Right now, if you don't have health insurance and you get breast cancer, good luck with that. What reform will do is make sure that women who currently aren't getting screened or treated because they can't afford it will get that care. Mammograms aren't the only kind of cancer screening that's being reconsidered in light of new evidence about the dangers of false positives. Another panel indicated that cervical cancer screenings could also be less frequent, which some conservatives use to lie and fearmonger.
First, we had the mammograms that they said this is not administration policy to move the age up to 50. Now, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, advises women to start Pap tests for cervical cancer at 21, not 18. The White House, this is what the Washington Post said quickly. White House aides said the political team leading the fight to pass health care reform first heard about this upcoming report, which the panel approved in March, in the past 2 weeks, and viewed it as one of many potential headaches that opponents could use to attack reform efforts.
This is doubly dishonest, because younger women who are at risk of cervical cancer are even less likely to see a doctor regularly because of lack of health insurance. Also, the same conservative voices that are suddenly so concerned about cervical cancer were singing an entirely different tune when the HPV vaccine was invented, and the religious right faced losing an entire STD to scare kids with. But to be fair, right-wingers aren't hitting this note as much. That's probably because they know they're simply not going to reach younger women with the scaremongering, and are more interested in playing to older women who have been falsely told that Medicare is threatened. I'd like to welcome John Marcotte to the program. John is no relation of mine that I know of, but I invited him on the show because he has an intriguing idea for protecting family values in the state of California, banning divorce. He's put out a petition for the 2010 California Protection of Marriage Act, which would ban divorce in California if passed. He's here today to talk about his petition and why he's so hell-bent on protecting families from the scourge of divorce. Welcome to RealityCast, John.
It's a pleasure.
So, why did you decide to make banning divorce your passion?
Well, you know, I was actually inspired by Proposition 8, the prop that we had last year that banned gay marriage. I have to admit that I voted against it, to my shame. I thought I'd framed it in my mind as a civil rights issue, that this was about giving gays rights. And then I saw the Yes on 8 website, and what struck me is they don't even mention gay people on their website. They want to protect traditional marriage and think of the children. And I thought, oh, it's not about gay rights. And I thought, those are great ideals, but they went about it in a very odd way. Preventing gay people from getting married doesn't make my marriage that much safer, but stopping straight people from getting divorced, that makes marriage safe in a way that Prop 8 could only dream of.
And so your website kind of has a lot of information on there about your arguments for why people shouldn't be able to get divorced, but do you care to reiterate them here?
Oh, sure. I mean, basically we have kind of a three-plank platform that I think mirrors some of the arguments that were made for Prop 8. The first is protecting traditional marriage, and I think that's just obvious. You can't protect a marriage more than if you don't allow it to dissolve. Our kind of slogan for that is, you said till death do us part, you're not dead yet. And, you know, people made a vow before God in the community that they were going to stay together, and so we're just asking them to honor that commitment. And the second one is think of the children. This was a argument that was made all the way down the stretch with Prop 8 that somehow the schools were going to be forced to teach kids about homosexuality. And I thought, hey, I'm Catholic. I'm Roman Catholic, and we don't even have the institution of divorce in my church. And I don't want the government teaching my kids that, divorce is cool or, legally permissible. I mean, that's really a conversation that should happen between a parent and a child. I don't want the state informing my kids about those type of issues. And the third is, it's not an overt statement, but I think we all know that Prop 8 had a lot of religious bases. You know, the Roman Catholic Church and the Church of Latter-day Saints were two of the biggest money donors to the Prop 8 campaign. And, as I said, I'm Catholic. It's against my faith. So I came up with some things like, Jesus still loves you if you get divorced, just not as much as before. And hell is eternal, just like your marriage was supposed to be. Jesus actually specifically prohibited divorce three times in the Bible. He never even mentioned gay people, which I assume was some sort of clerical oversight. But still, we have to take him at his word. I think divorce is a much bigger concern of the Lord's than gay marriage.
So what would you say to critics that would point out that in our country we have a separation of church and state and perhaps not everyone should live by your religious dogma?
Right. Well, I think obviously when that issue comes up, you shift to one of the other two positions, that it's a moral decision outside of the realm of religion. That's where Prop 8, I think, was very smart. They don't mention the overtly religious messaging on their website, but we all know it's there. And it's the same with me. I guess I'm being a little bit more honest in that I put it on the website. But if you're worried about separation of church and state, let's just focus on the first two. We're not about religion. We're just protecting traditional family values and thinking of the children. Kids who come out of a divorced home suffer great economic and educational hardship. There have been study after study that prove that, and there really haven't been equivalent studies that say anything about children who are raised by gay parents. So, again, I'm not saying what they did with Prop 8 is wrong. I'm just saying we have a better case that banning divorce would help kids and protect traditional marriage than what they did with Prop 8.
Your anti-divorce movement is really bringing people together. Your protests are well attended. Keith Olbermann praised you, called you the best person in the world. And the American Family Association, that's usually known for not being on Keith Olbermann's side, noticed you as well. Are you surprised to be getting support from so many corners?
Well, I think that this shows what a centrist position I've staked out. I mean, how many people on the planet can get the tacit endorsement of the American Family Association in the same week that they were named Keith Olbermann's best person in the world? We're getting support from the left and support from the right. What's really surprising is the amount of support from the gay and lesbian community that I've received. I think they looked at Prop 8, they've had some time to think about it, and now they realize the importance and the value of protecting traditional marriage. I mean, we're going to win in a landslide. We're going to get the right and the left behind us. Prop 8 already passed. We'll pick up all of them, add some more. It's not even a question that this thing's going to pass.
It's somewhat surprising to me because isn't the divorce rate at 50% in the U.S.? Wouldn't you consider that a popular thing to do?
Well, sometimes, other people have to sacrifice in order to protect my ideas of traditional marriage. I think, that's one of the lessons we learned from Prop 8. And, I think we can do it. We just need all the moral Christian people who voted for Prop 8 to line up behind this. And I'm sure that they'll support this, even though this time it'll be their rights that get curtailed, because after Prop 8, to not support me would be hypocritical, and I have more faith in the California voter than that.
The California Secretary of the State authorized your petition, and there was a slew of editorials, I was looking around this morning, suggesting that it's somehow not a big deal because it's not going to pass anyway. What would you say to those critics that say that, sure, let this petition go because it's not going to pass?
Well, I think that they're fooling themselves. Again, I think that it's showing a lack of faith in the voters of California. Californians passed Prop 8 on the basis of protecting traditional marriage. I'm doing an even better job of protecting traditional marriage. And then on top of that, I'm getting all this support from the gay and lesbian community that didn't exist for Prop 8. So, you know, Prop 8 only passed by just the slimmest of votes. It was, you know, 52-47, I think. And we're going to just win in a landslide. We'll pick up that 52, and then a ton of the people who voted against Prop 8 seem to have lined up behind this measure. So I think that they're going to be in for a rude surprise when this gets on the ballot and it gets passed into law.
So how can people that want to help you protect the traditional family support you in your efforts?
Well, we do have a website. It's rescuemarriage.org, and we're taking donations there, and we're getting we have the petitions available, and we're trying to get a format where we can provide training over the web so we can distribute those widely across the state. Right now we're having workshops for people so that you have to get training before you can collect signatures. There are some legalities involved with that, but we're getting people trained. We need signatures. We could use some funds, although we're not one of those big moneyed ballot initiatives that you see. It seems like you can pay your way to get on the ballot if you sink enough money into things. We are an all-volunteer organization, a true populist movement, and I think in the end that's going to really, really help us.
The other pro-family organizations and groups and movements have really taken a multi-state approach. You definitely see that with the attempts to ban gay marriage and the attempts to ban abortion. At all points in time, it's going on in different states. Maine just had an election where they banned gay marriage. So are you looking to go on a multi-state movement? Are you sticking to California?
Well, I think we have to focus on one thing at a time. You know, I really want to get this to succeed in California. It's my home state. But I'd love to take this to Maine. You know, question one was the exact same measure was put forth by the exact same supporters of Prop 8. And the issues remain identical. I think that you could very easily make the case in Maine the same way that you did in California, that what I'm trying to do is a more logical way to protect traditional marriage. And, you know, we have to be careful. Those measures are passing, again, by incredibly slim margins. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, it would have been 20 or 30 points. Now we're down to under 5. And it looks like the tide of history is turning in favor of letting gay people get married. And since we want to protect traditional marriage so much, I think this is a great way to shore it up. You know, instead of asking gay people not to get married, we need to look hard at ourselves. And if we're saying make marriage is sacred, maybe make some sacrifices on our end to help shore up the traditional marriage.
So one last question. Have you reached out to organizations that are trying to ban gay marriage and see if you could get them to help you with your much stronger efforts at protecting traditional marriage?
Well, we really want to make some outreaches to Mally Gallagher, or Maggie Gallagher over at NAM. They had that Gathering Storm ad, which I really loved. I thought it was brilliant. Evidently, if you let gay marriage happen, it will start raining homosexuals, which I wasn't aware of. But, you know, we want to talk to NAM. I've been on Catholic radio, and I got a surprising amount of agreement from them because Catholics don't believe in the institution of divorce. They really couldn't argue with me too much, so I'm hoping for some support there. Yes, we're planning on a strong outreach to the Latter-day Saints, to NAM, to the Catholic Church, all these organizations that were so concerned with protecting traditional marriage. We really expect they're going to line up behind us because, it's a little hypocritical to expect other people to sacrifice to protect traditional marriage when you're not willing to do it yourself.
My guest today has been John Marcotte, marriage and family activist. You can check out the website for the 2010 California Marriage Protection Act at rescuemarriage.org. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, John.
It was a pleasure, Amanda.
Now the Senate has started to debate health care reform. And the good news is, as expected, while the Senate is generally more conservative than the House overall, there is a much lower chance of seeing an explicit ban on private abortion funding like the Stupak Pitts Amendment. Which means, you guessed it, another round of anti-choice hysteria and lies. Bill O'Reilly is leading the dishonesty charge.
Here's what I think tipped it. I think it's the abortion option in the health care bill that is not going to go through, but so many Democrats want it to go through, which would force all Americans, even pro-life Americans, to fund through their taxpayer dollars abortions.
This is a blatant lie, of course. If Stupak Pitts is stripped, there will not be any federal funding of abortion. All that will change is that women who buy private insurance through the healthcare exchange, most of whom will have some subsidies to do so, will maintain privately funded abortion coverage. Privately funded. There is no way that federal dollars will be going to abortion. That's already explicitly banned by the Hyde Amendment. Now, make no mistake, the Hyde Amendment is a very bad thing, and it's incoherent too. The idea behind it is that anti-choicers have a special right not to pay taxes for something they don't like. The rest of us, however, have to pay for all sorts of things we don't like, such as killing actual people in war. Which is to say that the Hyde Amendment puts sperm magic on a higher pedestal than any other thing in our society, bar none. That's a lot of penis power right there. Still, the Stupak Pitts Amendment does the Hyde Amendment one worse because it prevents private companies from using private money to pay for women's private medical decisions. But defenders of it are denying that this is true and implying that it's more limited than that. For instance, here's Steve Ducey lying on Fox and Friends.
And that's all our amendment says. Our amendment just extends current law to the expansion of the federal role in health care.
Yeah, but Congressman, when you heard David Axelrod say that over the weekend over on one of the other channels, your jaw must have dropped because you guys have been burning the midnight oil trying to make this thing work, making it very clear that federal money will not be used to end a life.
Ha! Huh. I wish they banned federal money from ending a life. That would mean an immediate pullout from Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as an end to the federal death penalty. What he said has no relationship to the Stupak Pitts Amendment, which very specifically bans insurance companies from using private funds to cover abortions for women receiving subsidies to buy health insurance. But nice how Ducey inadvertently revealed that the only life that counts to anti-choicers is that of non-sentient fetuses. Bart Stupak has been burning the midnight oil at one thing and one thing only, which is misleading the public on what it is exactly that his amendment does. And many so-called journalists are letting him do it, even when he's not on the Fox propaganda network. For instance, Chris Matthews let Stupak lie on air.
Yes, we like to keep current law in federal health care. I mean, if we expand federal health care, we think current law, which is the Hyde Amendment, which says we do not pay for the benefit of abortion, nor do we pay for health care plans which provide abortion. So we're just going to keep current language.
How many members do you have that will fight to the finish?
See? Blew right past that blatant lie without batting an eyelash, even though I do believe that Matthews is technically pro-choice. Stupak Pitts is not consistent with current law. It expands it, and this means that abortions that would be covered under current law will not be covered in the future. That's a change, and therefore is not consistent with current law. And now for the wisdom of wingnuts. Let's make that subtext the text edition. I've been saying for months now that a lot of the opposition to healthcare reform can best be understood if you see that the opponents are afraid they'll have to sit in waiting rooms next to poor people and people of color. Well, leave it to Lamar Alexander to nearly come right out and say that.
Or arrogant in its dumping of 15 million low-income Americans into a medical ghetto called Medicaid that none of us or any of our families would ever want to be a part of for our health care.
Yep, he just compared universal health care to forcing so-called real Americans to live in a ghetto. Nothing racist about that, no sir.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.